G'day friends, and welcome to Happy Days. This is your pal Jesse on the mic, saying a huge thank you to every single one of you for taking the time to listen to this little podcast. And if you enjoy this and other episodes, be sure to like and subscribe to the channel and ring that little notification bell so that you get updated every week when a new episode uploads. Happy Days is available on all streaming platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Anchor, you name it, it's there. So whatever platform you listen on, thank you. Thank you so much. You know, like there's so many podcasts out there, and the fact that you're investing a little bit of time to listen to this little show, that means the world to me. So thank you, you Brock. So thanks again to everyone that continues to listen to the show. This is proudly brought to you by my very own Freak Productions umbrella. This is my little creative hub where I create and write novels. I do my own comic book series. I've got three in production, all of which, you know, I love doing, as well as this podcast. I do two other podcasts as well. Fridays, I do Freaky Fridays with my pal Jake Reedy, a fellow writer. So we talk about all things horror, comics, horror, video games, horror, all things horror, okay? And then Saturday mornings, we do our Rad podcast, which is our pop culture podcast where we talk about movies, music, you name it. It's no holds barred. It's a lot of fun, man. So I keep a pretty busy schedule creatively, but that's the choice in life that I've made, and I have no regrets, and I absolutely love it. So if you want to support the journey, go to www.frekproductions.com. That's www.frekproductions.com. Jump on there, show some love. There is even a donation button that you can go there and send me a little high five or whatever. That just helps the wheels keep turning, and you know, because what I do is I recycle every week. I dive into the bins, and shout out to my boys at Lumber Punks who kindly support me in my endeavors to do this, and I raise money to commission artists in third world countries that are extremely talented. The money helps support their creativity and also, you know, supports their families. So I have a very ethical approach to what I do. And so long story short, any support that you can give makes the world go around. Thank you. I appreciate it. Let's get on with the show, man. This is a good one. I have the absolute pleasure of speaking to interesting people week in, week out from all walks of life. And this week, I get to the absolute joy of speaking to one of my favorite human beings. And oh, look, every guest I have on here is one of my favorite human beings. But this week is a especially special human being. I get to talk to my buddy Bree, who many of you that remember Big Brother would remember Breezy. She was one of the she was one of the big stars of the show back in the day. Bree Amor Wilkes, she was one of the OGs. She's experienced it firsthand. She experienced the world of celebrity status before all the social media and all that crazy kerfuffle that a lot of celebrities today go through. She kind of kicked it old school, and as you listen to this episode, we're going to explore that whole social experiment without phones, any of that sort of, you know, any of those creature comforts that we have that we take for granted today. So it's a very fascinating discussion. We talk about her time in Big Brother. We also talk about, you know, the wonderful world of Dracula's, from where we both came from, Dracula's Cabaret Restaurant on the Gold Coast, where she was also, you know, not only a waitress, but a star of the show. And we talk about the impact of working in a place like that that facilitated our creativity and our personalities to where we are today as people. And I just I think it's a really inspiring and engaging conversation, and I hope that you can all get something from it that helps you, you know, find your own path in life. And that's really the aim of every week that I do this show, is more to help us find our path and give a little bounce in our step. So without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to Bree. I've fast forwarded it pretty much to the start of the conversation, before we have a little bit of, hey, how you going, all that sort of stuff. You know, I just cut all that out and just get straight to the meat and bones of it. So she's talking about, working a lot with her husband, and they have two beautiful kids, and it's a great chat. I absolutely love Breezy. She's a wonderful human being. So without further ado, enjoy this Happy Days conversation with Bree Amor Wilkes.
Yeah, both of us kind of doing 50 or 60 hours a week wasn't very realistic with kids. So, I started to be a marriage celebrant and I love it. Like, you're nice. part of the best day of people's lives.
Yeah. I've heard really good reports about the art of being a marriage celebrant. You know, I've got a couple of friends that do it and they do it well. And I can only imagine you'd be amazing at it because you just... You're breezy. You're freaking awesome, man. So,
You know what? You should do it. That'd be like a really niche, like, market you could get into there and do like metal weddings.
I have had people tell me that, and I'm just, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see what happens. It'd be funny.
It's a lot, though. It's like 750 hours of study.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And the study's pretty boring because it's like legalities.
Yeah. I mean, the thing, I guess that's a really good segue to lead into where I want to go with this conversation, because if we can time warp a little bit, I mean, we got a little history together.
Don't we?
Yeah, dude. Like, I'm time warping back to the glory days of Drax, you know, back when we were getting into all kinds of mischief at Dracula's. And because I
like 100 years ago.
I know, right? Back before electricity was invented, right? I think before the dinosaurs even walked the earth. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So I was like chatting to Richard Marcianus.
Yeah.
Legend guy. And we had some great laughs about Dracula. So I was hoping to sort of get a bit of insight from you, but more about not so much the humorous side, but just also the what it did for your confidence and for your, helping you develop the person that you are today.
It's funny, you know, because I feel like anyone who worked there for a period of time wouldn't be surprised by that question, because I feel like it had such a huge impact on whoever worked there. And it's weird, like, I don't know if you have this, but I have this thing in my head where I have time markers in my life, and everything was like, is like before or after Dracula's, or while I was at Dracula's. And then I have, you know, a couple of other ones that are like, you know, before or after Big Brother. And then, but there's these like these few things that really had such an impact on me.
Yeah.
And that is definitely the first of them. And I suppose it was the most fun I've ever had in a job. It was probably the hardest I've ever worked. It's probably the hardest I ever partied. And also, like, it had such a big impact on me. I don't know, I'd be really interested to know if you if you do this, because like obviously I did the show and I was also a waiter there for a long time.
Yeah.
And I still have dreams all the time that I'm forgetting drink orders and looking for drink orders at Dracula's.
Oh, wow.
Or I have dreams often that I'm in the show, I'm back in the show, and I forget like to do one of the quick costume changes to the show. And I reckon I have a Dracula's dream at least once every 6 months. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah. And I wake up feeling like I'm right back there. Like, it's really, so that is like telling, I guess, of how big an impact it did have on me. And yeah. I mean, I worked there from when I was 17, if you remember correctly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I think we worked together for about 5 years there.
Yeah, at least. Yeah. And I mean, you were a kid. You were just like, you were so fresh faced and, I don't know, just, you weren't kind of the extravagant, charismatic person that you are today. You were kind of a bit more, I don't know, reserved. But I guess, like all of us, as soon as you get a taste of the magic of Dracula's, you just find yourself going, oh, a douche. You there?
I think when my phone goes dark, it cuts out for some weird reason. And speaking of Wadooj, I'm pretty sure it was only because Alfie, who was our boss, read my resume wrong that I actually started when I was 17, because he didn't realize I was 17 until I'd been working there for like 6 months.
It's okay. We can let that one slide.
Well, I'm really glad that happened.
Yeah, dude, totally. I mean, that was like, I'm yet to meet the person that said they had the shittest time working there. I think it was honestly some of the best years of our lives, man. And I just watched you blossom into just such a charismatic personality. And
Oh, were you there?
Yeah, you there? Sorry.
Yeah, sorry, it just cut out.
That's okay. Yeah, when you finished up a Dracula's, remember the time honored tradition of how we say farewell to a Draculette.
And God.
Yours was probably the most memorable of all the Draculettes that ever left. Yours was
so bad.
I still remember
any HR net these days would have a field day with the stuff that we used to do to each other. Yeah, like, do you remember who was it that they tied to the front fence and put a sign on them saying honk to bonk? Do you remember that?
Yes. It was so wrong.
Like,
it was one of the little guys. So I can't remember his name.
God.
Dude,
but with me, yeah, they saved up the slops because I went to Melbourne to work at Melbourne Dracula's down there. Mm, so when I was leaving to do that, they saved up the slops, which is like the runoff of all of the cocktails and like drinks and stuff and all the leftover food for like days. And they saved it all up in this huge,
It was wrong.
It wasn't a bucket. It was like literally like a... what do you call it? Like a barrel, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like this huge barrel.
Yeah.
And they threw me in the industrial garbage bin and poured it all over the top of me. Mm-hmm. And it was literally like vomit. It was absolutely disgusting. And
you poor thing, you were wearing that red jumpsuit sequin, satin jumpsuit. And oh my God.
It was so bad. And then I washed the costume and everything. And then I went down and like my first night at Dracula's in Melbourne, someone was like, what is that smell? And I was like, oh, I think that might be me. And they were like, no, it's not like a human smell. It's like off milk. And I'm like, that's definitely me.
Yeah.
That is definitely me. And I was picking like fish bones and stuff out of my wig for months.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't think that smell would have come out of that costume anytime soon, let alone your personal body as well.
Oh, honestly, I can still smell it now if I think about it hard enough.
Dude, I can memorize that smell. I don't know why. I can remember it. It was like really bad fish guts. And I felt so sorry for you.
it was so like, bad.
Like, yeah, it was a HR night.
But so fun. Like, I've never laughed so much in my life.
Oh, man. It was hilarious. But, man, you bounced back from that. You had some good times at Dracula's. You did a lot of cool stuff. But it was around that time that you auditioned for Big Brother?
I was working between kind of Dracula's and the Hard Rock at the time, I think, which was just the rite of passage for anyone who worked at Dracula's kind of somehow ended up at the Hard Rock. I was just really lost and kind of like, don't know what to do with my life. I'd heard about the Big Brother auditions, didn't know the applications for it. And I'd put in an application, I'd done one, but hadn't sent it in. And then one night when I finished at the Hard Rock, I was walking back to my car and passed out on the bonnet of my car was a guy who was on Big Brother the year before. And I was like, it's a sign. I too could be passed out on someone's bonnet of their car, you know? And so the next day I sent the audition tape in, because back then you sent in a VHS. Mm-hmm. That's how long ago it was. And the rest is history, hey?
Man, that was amazing. Like, I didn't know that about the omen of the passed out former Big Brother contestant. That's amazing.
Yeah. And he was that was a big part of the reason why I actually sent the tape in, because I was it had been on my mind. And then, that happened. So pretty funny.
Because, anyone that remembers, I mean, you know, Big Brother was such a big part of our television lives, in front of the TV. And I don't know, like, and I'm not being biased here, but, you know, of everybody that was ever on that show, you were always one of the most, you know, you just stood out ahead of the pack, in my opinion. You were just such a personality, and just, it was so cool, you know, watching you on TV and just going, wow, this is amazing. Like, what a trip that would have been for you. Like, that
you experience. Are totally biased.
Yeah, totally. it's because you're paying me, so, you know. I never really wanted to, I don't know, I never asked you about it back then, but, between mates now, you know, on this thing, I guess if it's cool, I'd love to ask you about that whole experience for you. I know you've done a billion interviews about it, but I don't know, I'd just like to sort of get a different perspective. Yeah. Of the emotional journey for you of doing that.
Yeah, of course.
Mm. Like, so going into that house and living with complete strangers, I mean, how did that impact you on a personal level and knowing that you're on camera?
Yeah, I mean, look, it was interesting. I only ever did it because I was interested in the social experiment side of it, to be honest. Like, I never did it to be famous, or I never thought I'd get a career out of it or anything like that. Yeah. Like, everything that came later was an added bonus, because I just was at a total crossroads in my life. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew I didn't want to work at the Hard Rock or Dracula's anymore. And I'd already always been like really interested in, like, loved the show, loved the whole, oh my God, how would you go, like, living with 14 strangers type thing. So that's what kind of drew me to it. Back then, you know, I was 21. I had no partner, no kids. No mortgage.
The world was your oyster.
I think I was paying like $90 a week or something in rent.
Wow.
And really, it was a great time in my life to do something like that, because I went in there was nothing aside from my family on the outside that I was particularly missing. And so I just had the time of my life, really. Like, it was just like this huge holiday, and it was amazing because you're totally disconnected from the world. So there's no music, there's no TV, there's no phones, no internet, no computers, not even a pencil and paper in the whole place, you know. And so I think to revert back to, you know, to nothing and have nothing but each other to talk to for entertainment, there's something really magic about that. And I think it would be even more so now, because obviously everyone 18 years down the track has iPhone addictions and things like that that make the lack of connection even harder, but it would just make it so much better, because it's back to basics. And I just loved it. And you know, it's in some ways it's like being at school as a kid, because you've got this principal figure that's, you know, Big Brother, and you go to them for everything, and they tell you what to do, and they control the whole thing. So there's something kind of childlike about it too.
I found that incredibly fascinating, because I mean, back then, you know, like, we were still relatively innocent, of the innocent age, you know, before iPhone addictions and social media addictions and all that crazy stuff, you know. So it was like a simple case of, oh yeah, cool, I'll just go back to basics, like you said. And and just live in a dorm with a bunch of complete strangers. So you weren't really reliant on that social connectivity that everyone's addicted to today. So,
well, no, because you got the social connectivity in person.
Yes. Real conversations, right? And real connections. Like, that's really interesting.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, look, I don't have a bad thing to say about it. Like, so many people get out and kind of have a bad taste in their mouth and, oh, you know, I didn't like the way that I was edited or whatever, which I just think is the biggest cop-out in the world.
But you were
I think people just don't generally have the self-awareness to realize what they're really like, you know. But anyway.
But sorry to interject. You took the whole thing, like, I don't know, you handled it so well. Like, you were still, like, when you came out of the house and everything, you didn't suffer from that celebrity ego that a lot of people do. Like, you were still breezy. You were still like our mate. Like, you had your head screwed on. Yeah. Feet were planted on the ground. You always had time for your friends. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, it was amazing just to see how it didn't impact you on the outside. So yeah, kudos to you, man.
That's nice. Yeah. That's good to hear. Cause I mean, I don't feel like it ever did, but I also never really chased that side of it.
Mm.
I think, you know, like doing Friday Night Live and all that stuff that kind of came after it, it just landed in my lap. It wasn't anything that I kind of chased, and I was really lucky. And then that then led into, you know, years of doing kind of, I mean, I was already doing radio before I did the show, but it led into kind of years of radio and TV presenting and stuff like that. And then that, when I got sick of that, then led into me taking a step into TV producing, which is what I then did for another 10 years or so. So, you know, all that stuff, all the last 18 years of my life has basically been a roll-on effect from doing that show. You know, I met my husband working in TV, and, you know, so there's lots of sliding doors moments of things that wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for that show.
It's amazing. Like, I just love the cascade, the ripple effect of the whole thing. Like,
from
getting to a crossroads in life, from Dracula's to finding an omen that directed you to the path that you ended up on to where you are today. I just think that's incredibly fascinating. Like I said, without being biased, I mean, you really stood out literally in the Big Brother camp, especially, you know, obviously with the little kerfuffle with the voting system. That was quite an infamous moment of sorts, but you handled that like a champion. You were just, you would, like, no grudge, nothing. You were just completely good about it.
Oh, I was fine about it. To be honest, I remember when they told me the night that it happened, I was like, don't worry about it. I won't worry about going back in. And they were like, no, you have to. I'm like, no, I don't want to. I'm drinking cocktails with my girlfriend. I don't want to go back in. And I was literally drinking cocktails with Jackie and Claudette, friends of ours. And, and they were like, no, you could sue us for like $1 million. So you have to go back in because you weren't meant to come out. And I was like, oh. So, yeah, I mean, like, shit happens, right?
Yeah, it does. It does.
I'm sure that wasn't something that was done on purpose, and it just became part of the journey, really.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously that, you know, what followed was, you know, celebrity status and, you know, obviously leading on to being a radio host and TV host and all that sort of thing. How was that process for you, like going from 1 minute anonymity and not chasing stardom to suddenly, you know, you're one of the most recognizable characters in Australia? Like, how was that process for you and your family?
Yeah, look, it was really hard, to be honest. I think there's really not, it's even hard to explain, but like, this Big Brother is one of the unique shows. It's probably one of the only ones, actually, where it's not a gradual build into something like that, because you literally go into this house as a nobody and come out and everyone's been watching it, but you haven't. You've just been living your life like normally.
Yeah.
And so it's literally like overnight. I went from bumming around in this house with like two or three people to coming out and having 3.5 million people in Australia watch the grand final that we were in.
Yeah.
And literally everyone knowing who you were. And It was very overwhelming. Like, I never in my wildest dreams could have imagined that. And, you know, I remember when we got out there, because I was in the grand final, so the guy that won, Trevor, and myself, who came second, they got 24-hour security for us. And so we had that for about 2 weeks. And the security guys would literally stand outside our door while we slept. If we went to the toilet, they would stand outside the toilet cubicle. If we got food delivered to the room, they would, like, check the food. Like, it was really hardcore, especially because it was the first year and the only year that it was $1 million. So I guess there was increased security around that as well. And then all of a sudden after 2 weeks, they just, like, drop you like a hotcake and that's it. And there's no one around to kind of help you deal with it. But the level of hysteria around it hadn't changed. And so, you know, it was hard as well because, and look, I'm definitely not saying poor me, because the good outweighs the bad, absolutely, you know, tenfold. But I think because of the nature of the show and you being in people's houses and lives twice a day back then, 7 days a week, people felt like they knew us. And so, you know, you'd be going to a bar to catch up with friends and people would be like, oh, yeah, Brie. And I'd go, oh, hi, how are you going? You know, and walk away. And when you'd walk away, they'd get really offended. Like, they'd expect you to sit down and have a drink with them. And, like, and they'd be like, oh, you bitch. And I'd be like, oh, hang on. And so it was really hard to kind of find the balance of being polite and engaging without letting people down and them then getting kind of aggressive. Like, it was a really weird thing. But then,
I can imagine, I was just gonna say, I can imagine what that would have felt like, because, like, I mean, your mum's an absolute sweetheart, I love her dearly, and, like, just doing little things like, I don't know, going mum and daughter day, going to the shops and just doing something normal like that, you wouldn't have been able to do anything like that, would you?
Yeah, I mean, look, I still did. It just made it a lot more difficult. And in some ways it was great, like, don't get me wrong, but yeah, it was a massive adjustment. And it was just something that, even though, I mean, it sounds weird saying it, I didn't expect that, but it's really hard to actually grasp what that will be like until you've experienced it. You know, and it went on for years, I suppose, because not at that level necessarily, but because I then went on to do Friday Night Live and stayed part of the kind of franchise for a long time, for 5 years, it kind of, you know, it did stay around for a long time. And with it came some great stuff and meeting some great people and traveling the country. And back then, before social media, we used to do, like, nightclub appearances and stuff and get paid to go and drink and party at nightclubs all over the country. You know, like, it was it was really, like, it was a trip. Like, it was such a good experience at that age. Like, if I was to do that now, I'd probably die of tiredness and have my stomach pumped or something. But I back then, you know, it was such an amazing life experience.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, did you, I don't know, when you rubbed shoulders with other celebrities, was that a little bit surreal for you, going, I'm on the same levels as you, but not really?
Like, oh my God, I never felt on the same level as, like, proper celebrity.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, it was, I mean, you know, going to the Logies and, like, doing all these funny arias and stuff like that. Like, so fun. Like, stuff that you'd never really picture yourself doing. I remember standing there next to Chris Noth, who was Mr. Big from Sex and the City one night.
Oh, wow. Well,
yeah.
That would have been a trip.
Pretty full on. And also doing, like, the TV circuit, you know, back then it was, like, Rove and Bert Newton, bless his soul.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, all these, you do all that stuff as well. Yeah, you know, Good Morning Australia and, like, all the Today shows, whatever they are, you know, whatever they're called.
Yeah. It seems like such a different ball game in comparison to, I guess, what it is today. Like, you know, I don't know. I kind of, part of me feels for people that do it today, because I think their methodology for doing it is completely different to, say, yourself, who wasn't chasing, you know, that fast track to stardom or whatever. You were doing it purely for a life challenge. I feel like it's a different story for today's reality stars. And now that you're doing the behind the scenes stuff more and more, how do, I don't know, like, I'm curious and interested in the comparisons between reality TV today versus when you did it?
Look, I mean, Big Brother was kind of the original reality show.
Yeah.
And I feel really fortunate that I was involved in it and experienced it when it was still that, like you said, that kind of raw, unaffected thing. And, you know, I think there's so much reality TV now, and I'm not criticizing that because it's what has employed me for years.
Yeah, and it's what that's watch. What
the only TV, the only TV producing I do is reality TV. So, but, you know, there's so much of it, and I think definitely people have different motivations. Like, are they going on it to get the Instagram followers to make money off Instagram, you know, like, or are they doing it, you know, people are just have wised up about it, I guess, and in some ways that loses the magic a little bit for me. But also, hats off to people who do put their hand up and do it now. There's no way I would survive the social media side of it now, of like the reality TV fame and things like that. People are horrible. Like, no matter if you are the most liked person on television or the most hated, they will find something to criticize you about. Like, for example, when I, and this was even before social media, so this was like on forums. So to give you an insight of how bad they would be now, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer years ago, right? Yeah, like a long time ago. It's all fine. But I remember when it made the press, it was in this like forum chat. It was like, it's not cancer growing out of her neck, it's a dick growing out of her head.
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh my God, like even that isn't off limits. You know what I mean? And so now people like go on reality TV shows, open up their lives to people who are sitting at home, and they're getting messages from people and they're like, you should die. You know, like it's just, it is so awful, and it's a minority of people. But there's no way that I could deal with that. I just wouldn't, I would be like, oh my God. Like, I think it's quite a brave thing to put yourself out there now.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel it's completely different now versus yesterday. Because I mean, as you so beautifully explained, like, you know, doing all the TV interviews and TV weeks and all that sort of thing versus today where it's, you're an influencer, you've got, Instagram, you've got Facebook, you've got TikTok and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The list goes on. And I can only imagine the level of anxiety that must create for people in that bubble today.
Totally. And I unfortunately think that still a lot of people who go onto TV shows now underestimate it.
Absolutely.
I think that they think, oh no, you know, I'm not a bad person, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
And that is probably the case. But it just doesn't matter if you're a good or a bad person. People will hate you because you're too nice or hate you because you're not nice. Like, it actually doesn't matter. Like, it's just everyone is unfortunately fair game, which isn't the way that it should be, but it is.
That's crazy. Now, sorry, I won't stay on the Big Brother train too much longer with you, but I'm curious. Like, I recently had, not too long ago, Mr. Mike Goldman on the show, and
oh yeah, I listened.
That was a fun chat. He's a I don't know. I was a little intimidated because he's just such a larger than life personality. And you did a lot of work with him as well. How was that transition for you going into mode, working alongside people like Gretel Colleen and Mike?
Yeah, I mean, look, it was quite gradual. Like initially when they got me on Friday Night Live, I was only meant to do the one night and like as a guest, it was only meant to be Fitzy and Mike on that show. And then the first episode they got me on as a special guest, and then we just, the three of us just worked, and they ended up keeping me on and not ever going back to just the two of them. And so it was kind of a bit of a gradual thing. But at the time, I was like really good friends with Fitzy and Mike. So it kind of just felt like I was hanging out with my mates, to be honest. And then when we branched out to other things, it was just always a lot of fun. I mean, I found it relatively easy because it was just fun and because we all got on so well.
Yeah. That's a really cool answer. And like, I guess moving on from there, when you started getting into being a producer and that, I'm really interested in and how that appealed to your senses as a career move. Like, was that a natural thing, or was it like an opportunity?
I mean, I was working with producers all the time,
right?
Because, but I was doing stuff front of camera, and it always interested me what they did for their jobs. And then I did TV stuff for about 9 years after Big Brother. And then I just got a bit sick of not knowing when my next gig was. Like, I found it really stressful, to be honest. And it wasn't even that they were too far, few and far between at that point, but I just always felt like it had a time limit on it. So I decided to kind of step away and into the behind the scenes stuff, or to try to do that. And I knew that I couldn't do both and be taken seriously as a producer. So I knew I kind of had to really step away from the presenting stuff. And so I put the word out to a whole heap of producers and executive producers that I know, and most of them didn't take me seriously. It was actually only one, who is Ricky Proust, who's an amazing, amazing TV producer. And I said to him, you know, I'd be really interested in casting and TV producing. And he was the only person to kind of give me a go. And so he got me a job casting on the show World's Strictest Parents. That show.
Yeah.
And I was literally walking the streets at like 2 a.m. looking for kids who'd run away from home at like train stations and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And I found quite a few of them that were cast on the show. And so when that happened and it went quite well, they then offered me a job casting on My Kitchen Rules. And so I moved from the Gold Coast to Sydney to do that, and I was only going to come down for 3 months, and it's now been like 11 years
with a husband and two kids.
yeah and we kind of, you know, worked in TV the whole time up until recently. So and I did a lot of casting and a lot of story producing and stuff as well. So
that's so cool.
Been a wild ride.
Yeah, good on you, mate. That's amazing. Well done.
Thanks.
I think that's like incredibly inspiring. And hopefully people listening can get some inspiration from that. Like, because, the way you've done everything is just such an organic process. And like the way you talk about wanting to learn the behind the scenes stuff, that's, I can relate to that as a musician wanting to learn what goes into putting on a show. So I started learning crew work and stuff, which I love doing. So, hats off to you, man. That's amazing. Awesome.
Yeah. And to you.
Yeah, thanks. But, what about the big challenge of being a mum? You're just such an amazing human being, and you're such an energetic person. How is that moment and experience for you, like, you know, becoming a mum?
Well, I'm definitely nowhere near as energetic as I was when I was 21, Jess. But look, I mean, it's totally life-changing, right?
Yeah.
It rocks your world. They're the best thing that's ever happened. They're also the most exhausting.
I bet they are.
But I just think that they're so funny. Like, they're like little midget stand-up comedians. They're just so funny. And life is so much better with them in it. And I just feel like my husband and I were saying the other day that every age they kind of get to, you're like, oh, this is the best age. And they're this is the best age. That's because, you know, there's just so much good in every kind of different stage of life with them.
Yeah.
And I'm now at the point where Hunter, my oldest one, he's just started school, and all of a sudden he feels so grown up to me. And then Harlow's 2, turning 3 in a few months. And I all of a sudden feel like I need to kind of cherish that age that she's at, because I already feel like it's going so fast.
That's amazing. Yeah.
I mean, you know what it's like, right? Like, how old is Danita now?
Oh, she's, late 20s. Yeah.
See, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, they grow up, man.
In my head, she's still like 7.
Yeah, they grow up, man.
And it's like, that's so fast. It just happens so fast. And I feel like I'm going to blink and they're going to be 20.
Yeah. Before you know it, your kids are like 21, you know, like it's, yeah, it's.
Oh my God, you're nearly at like grandpa age.
Yeah, right? It's crazy.
But, world's coolest grandpa.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. But yeah, like I'm really stoked that we, you know, that you got to share this journey with me. And I guess, you know, I won't hold you up too much longer because I know you probably want to have some downtime while the kids are hopefully settled down past their bedtime. But I'm curious, like, for people that are interested and inspired by this conversation, like, do you have any form of advice to pass on to people that are thinking about maybe, you know, the world of media or getting into behind the scenes?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting thing. Like, I mean, I think with everything that I've done, including like even back to Dracula's days and before that crazy, another kind of theater restaurant I worked at, I kind of just put my hand up and did things for free until I could prove myself. Not that I'm telling anyone to go out and work for free because that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I think if you're willing to learn and you find somebody to take you on, you know, it's a really good way to get an in. You know, there's definitely anyone who's wanting to work in TV production and media and things like that. You know, you can go down the route of studying media and, you know, going to university and then trying to get jobs that way.
Yeah.
Or you can go down the route of like the practical hands-on learning and starting from the bottom, like getting a job as a runner, you know, and working your way up, because like within the industry, there's plenty of people who have done it both ways, both through the university avenue and through just working your way up. And I think if you're willing to work really hard and like I said, start from the bottom and learn every kind of angle of the industry, then, you know, the world's your oyster.
Yeah.
And it is a very fun industry to be in, but it's also very hard work and very long hours, but it's really rewarding. Yeah, and I think, you know, find someone who's willing to give you a chance.
That's awesome. That's brilliant advice. And I think on that note, Breezy, I'm going to say thank you so much for sharing your happy days with me.
Oh, thank you for having me, Jesse.
Yeah, it's been the best. I'm so stoked. I mean, yeah, I've got this list of people I want to talk to, and you were definitely up there as one of them, and I'm just so glad we had this chat.
Oh, it's been my absolute pleasure. Let's hope we can have a chat and a drink in person sometime.
Yeah, it'll happen. It will happen. All right, Breezy. Well, thank you so much, and all the best to you and the family, and continued success in your career. And yeah, let's do this again sometime.
Thanks, man.
Right on. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
And that was my chat with Bree. What a wonderful human being. What a cool chat. She's such a gem to talk to. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in and listening to the show. If it was your first time, thank you so much. And I hope it's not your last. There's well over 30 or so episodes of interesting conversations with people from all walks of life. And it's such a thrill to have someone like Bree on this program. So thank you so much, Bree, for being on the show. And yeah, look, I hope many of you can come back next week for another episode. If you enjoyed this episode and others like it, whatever platform you listen to this on, do me a favor, hit the subscribe button, and just, you know, it just helps the wheels keep turning that little bit extra. And also ring the, you know, press the little bell, the little notification bell. That way you get updated when the new episodes pop up. These episodes pop up every Wednesday from 8 a.m., available for streaming on whatever platform you listen to. And if you're over the pond somewhere overseas, it's usually Tuesday nights, roughly. But yeah, new episodes every week. So once again, thank you to my very own Freak Productions that I am so proud of. That I get to bring you my books, my comic books, and my podcasts It's all here. And if you want to support what I do, head to www.freekproductions.com. That's www.freekproductions.com. Jump on there, show some love, and yeah, it means the world to me. Thanks again to Bree. Thank you to all of you awesome humans that support the show. You're amazing. I'm Jesse, and I look forward to having you here next week. Till then, have a great week. Stay happy, and don't forget to tune in to Freaky Friday this Friday, as well as Rad on Saturdays. Lots of action, week in, week out. This is Jesse signing off. Stay happy.